that are going very fast have been cinema staples for decades. In the Oscar Best Picture nominee Ford v. Ferrari, we find out a little about what it can take to make them go that fast.
Starring Matt Damon and Christian Bale, the film indeed tells the tale of an epic battle of Ford versus Ferrari in the 24-hour of Le Mans race in 1966. Full of vrooming energy and flaming tempers, it's all about plucky upstart Henry Ford II, bringing in a mouthy American designer and an English driver to help him get a big win. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking about Ford v. Ferrari today on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't vroom away.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Behind the Scenes, The Witcher, the official companion podcast for the Netflix series, The Witcher. So how did the writers, cast, and crew take almost 3,000 pages of original material and bring this world to light? In Behind the Scenes of The Witcher, host Brandon Jenkins finds out what it takes to adapt a fantasy book series into a season of television. New episodes premiere mid-January, with new episodes weekly. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Also with us is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair today is Bilal Qureshi. Bilal reports and produces cultural coverage for NPR. Hey, Bilal.
Hi, everyone.
Wonderful to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
Vroom, vroom. Stephen, I'm going to go to you first. Since you are the person that I associate with fast cars, that's not true. What did you think of Ford v. Ferrari?
You know, we recently on the show talked about the movie 1917, and Glenn, I think in particular, described it as the ultimate dad movie. This is the ultimate dad movie. I did not realize, I don't think of myself necessarily as the dad movie type of dad. Ford v. Ferrari proved that I am, in fact, that guy. This is some kind of old-fashioned CGI-free, cars zooming around kind of movie making. It's fun. It's a sports movie. I mean, do I think it breaks any kind of mold? I do not think it does. Do I think it's effective at capturing, like, the big race, the big clash of personalities, all that stuff? I think, to use a phrase that we sometimes use on the show, this movie is on rails, but I think it's very effective for what it is. I think James Mangold, the director, I think is a very skilled technician. You're in good hands throughout this thing. I don't think it's amazing, but I enjoyed it enormously.
I do want to say, in fairness, if you're out there and you're thinking, I like Ford v. Ferrari and I like car movies and I'm not a dad, or if you're
you are now.
Or if you're thinking, I am a dad, I did not like this movie. We are speaking generally, but I think it's fair to say it fits into a kind of a genre of movies that has a dad movie feel to it, in that it's very invested in kind of traditional American masculinity, if that makes sense. Bilal, what did you think of this movie?
I love this movie, actually, and I saw it at Toronto at the Film Festival a few months ago, and I took my dad to see it when it came out,
of course.
It was the perfect, and my 10-year-old nephew, who also loved it.
Dad's in training.
Dad's in training, exactly. So all of us were there in a row. What I liked about it a lot, and I think it's very easy to use a lot of bad driving puns in criticism of this film, so I'm not going to go there, but I did feel like it knew how to slow down as a film, which I liked the most about it, is that, in fact, while it has these large kind of racing sequences and all the vroom vrooms that we've talked about, it has quite a lot of silence in it as a film as well. And I think it has moments of being quite reflective and thoughtful. And the two central characters, played by Christian Bale and Matt Damon, have a really beautiful friendship. And I think that, for me, really came through. And when I think of sports films, you know, in high school classes, when you had to be forced to watch them to be inspired or something by your gym teacher or something, like, they always, you know, ended with that great big game or some kind of, you know, showdown. And I felt like in this film, it actually doesn't conclude in that way. It has other ways of bringing you into these characters' lives and into the kind of human side of this film, which I was not expecting from a movie called Ford versus Ferrari, which I don't think is the most poetic title, and I think in a way misses some of the poetry of the film and is a little too on the mechanical nose.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I think, you know, if you're not familiar with what happened in this real life situation in 1966, you know, Ferrari had been kind of more of a racing type of car and Ford was not. And so they had had some business dealings and potentially some business alignment. They were going to make a deal and then they didn't. And Henry Ford II, as we said, plucky upstart that he was, wanted to essentially beat Ferrari at racing because he was mad. about kind of the way, or at least in part because he was mad, so goes the legend. So he gets this character, Carroll Shelby, played by Matt Damon, who's an American auto designer kind of guy, to work with Ken Miles, played by Christian Bale, who's a British driver and kind of innovator of building cars. They talk about how he's got a kind of a car that he put together himself that he's able to drive to great success. And so these two guys have a little bit of the odd couple friendship. Sure. They have a little bit of the trying to make the big company accept our great ideas. And of course, there's a lot of kind of the inherent danger and suspense of racing. Mm-hmm. Glenn, talk to me about Ford v. Ferrari.
Well, this is essentially a historical drama, but it's also essentially a biopic, right? And it's the kind of biopic that I like because it takes a very thin slice of the person's life and sort of dramatizes that. So I'm going to ask the subject of another Oscar-nominated biopic of this season to speak to my feelings about this film. So, ladies and gentlemen, from the 1949 film In the Good Old Summertime, welcome to the stage, Miss Judy Garland.
I don't care.
The end of that song, she just goes, I don't care. And if I could have, I would have clipped that too. This is very well made. It's very well acted. It features Tracy Letts. Tracy Letts, let's agree, is the modern day Harry Dean Stanton.
As Henry Ford II.
As Henry Ford II. Roger Ebert famously said that any movie that Harry Dean Stanton is can't be all bad. So Tracy Letts. But this is the dad movie that I thought 1917 was going to be. This is Bridge of Spies 2019, as far as
so
I'm concerned.
So much better than Bridge of Spies.
And it's funny, every gambit this film busted out to try to gin up some enthusiasm in me, the portentous voiceover that there's a point at 7,000 RPM where everything fades. I was like, whatever. The scene where Christian Bale's character explains that Le Mans isn't an ordinary racetrack, it's a racetrack. And what is a really smart scene is the scene where his son, Christian Bale's son, creates a diagram of Le Mans so the filmmakers can walk you through the different aspects. That's very smart. Didn't do anything for me. They even went as far as stuffing John Bernthal's torso into a tight white dress shirt. And even then, I was unmoved. I get what you're doing, movie, and God love you for doing it. But at the end of the day, this is just dudes in their Roomba machines. This is a stick shift measuring contest. And I was out, completely out.
Wow.
To be fair, the last movie that involved car racing that I enjoyed involved a love bug. It was 1974.
I was going to say, I bet it's a Herbie movie.
It's a Herbie movie. So, again, well made. I can recognize the craft of it, but I just... Oof.
Bilal, what did move you about this?
Well, it's funny because as someone with no aspirations to being a dad, I'm feeling very much like channeling my inner dad. I don't know. I had this strong dad movie fandom in me. But I felt like what I really loved about this is that it struck me in the context of what we've been saying about big movies in general, big studio movies, because this is a big budget Fox studio produced film. And it has all the trappings of a big movie with flashy actors, great sets, you know, amazing machines, all of that. I really felt that the reason I really connected with it was that James Mangold, who I think is a very thoughtful filmmaker and a very thoughtful writer based on things that he's made before, including Logan, which was nominated for an Oscar for its screenplay, Walk the Line, which is a beautiful film as well, I think. He sort of is really, in a way to me, seems commenting on making movies today. You know, and in a way, this suits versus creative fight that's going on in the film mm-hmm. is also something that he has talked about and really reflected on when he introduced it at the festival. As kind of the message of the film is that how do you negotiate these relationships? How do you still hold on to your, I don't know, artisanal self while you're trying to work with all of these terrible people who are trying to sell things and who are trying to push certain things? And so I feel like that tension, which I know can also seem a little obvious in some ways, I felt it was beautiful to see it kind of worked through in this meta way in this film, which while using the racing world as its subject is really, it seems to me, about the kind of very, very working of the movie business now, especially when you deal with big studios.
Yeah.
And so I felt like for me, it managed to have heart and soul while still being a movie that you could watch at the IMAX with your 10-year-old nephew, as
yeah.
I did.
But
yeah.
Why do you think it is speaking to the movie industry now as opposed to at any time? At any time, artists would enter the movie industry and be swallowed up by a studio. How does it speak to today in any particular way?
I mean, I don't know if you agree or not, but I think movies like this are not getting made by studios at this particular point. time. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole notion of like, oh, they don't make them like this anymore. This movie has that quality to it as well. A, it's not very cynical. I find that there's a lot of cynicism, and one of its dad qualities, I suppose, is that it's quite earnest in a lot of ways. It doesn't have a lot of cynicism. Everyone's very kind, and ultimately it's about people being good to each other while there are like villain, and the villains are quite villainous in a very overt way.
And
cartoony. But I felt like that kind of element of it, the throwback nature of it, especially in 2019, is what felt to me striking, that how could something like that get made? And with the kind of budget that this movie had, I mean, I don't think it did very well, right? I mean, I don't think
it
hasn't seemed to me like a major conversation starter in the season. I mean, it's interesting that it's nominated, but
I think it's interesting, Bilal, that you kind of bring out this movie's, you know, poetry and metaphor and soulful contemplation. I'm just sitting here over here like, it's like the movie Cars for adults. and in my notes, it's like, wow, it's like the movie Cars for adults. And I see Glenn sitting here like, I don't know, it's like the movie Cars for adults.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that I find so interesting about this is that I think a lot of this, the difference between how kind of Glenn, for example, received this movie and Bilal received this movie is so interesting to me, because I think that American audiences in particular really differ on whether they can appreciate an artfulness and a soulfulness in driving and Cars. Hmm. Because if you think about the popularity of NASCAR, but not everywhere, right? If you have watched a lot of auto racing and a lot of driving, I think you're primed to understand this as sport and as creativity in a way that if you think of driving as driving, for example, you get up in the morning and drive from one place to another. For me, it's always find it hard to get into auto racing movies. Rush, which was the Ron Howard film about another real life auto racing story, I had a really hard time getting into it, even though I thought it was well shot. It's just, I think auto racing and car building is something that either it resonates with you as having an artfulness and a sportiness, or it just doesn't.
The Christian Bale character, Ken Miles, is really meant to be sort of the artist figure in the film, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the way he can listen to a car and feel it and all of those kinds of things that begin to get a little, you know, I'm sure cheesy for someone who doesn't relate to
that. Horse whisperer,
car whisperer character. And, you know, this movie was actually called Le Mans 66 in Europe and most other places. And I think that also in of itself is like that particular track and that particular race is meant to be kind of the ultimate, was in that particular time, the most creative and sort of challenging race, of course. And I do feel like the film has, a lot of it is not, I mean, it's not set in the racetracks as well. It's set in all these other kind of spaces where people are between the races and between the confrontations. So I don't know, I can feel, you know, I can understand the criticism as well. And yeah.
Yeah, and I appreciate your defense, because I see the point you're making. It's just the racing aspect of it was not the only thing I didn't quite respond to. It's the great man idea. Mm. This is a great man movie.
Right.
It's actually a subset of the great man movie, which is the troubled genius movie.
Sure.
And it's just pulling back a bit. We, as a culture, we tend to love troubled genius stories. And I think it has something to do with us trying to take achievement and weighting it down with something. Oh, this person could achieve something I never could.
Right.
But he's a D-bag.
But
so
I will say this, though. Troubled genius, maybe. Not really awful genius. Mm-hmm. Not really abusive to people in his life kind of genius. Those are the ones that I really get bothered by. This is not really that.
It's difficult more than troubled. Mm.
That was something also, I mean, in this not only great man film genre, but in the kind of crisis of masculinity in general that we're talking about a lot culturally, it was interesting to see a sort of a male friendship explored in this way to me on screen and with lots of negative spaces and unsaid things, but deep connection.
Yeah, it was explored. I don't want to spoil anything. It was explored and there was a lot of stuff that was left unsaid. It was kind of letting us kind of sit in that complicated relationship, and then it comes to a head in a way that's played for laughs. That was just, I'd seen that before in movies that are a lot worse than this.
I mean, but I think it comes to a head also in a way that's not played for laughs. I think it also comes to a kind of a climactic moment where, for a lot of the film, one of the things I did like about the relationship, even though to me, I come down on your side, Glenn, about the fact that it's mostly, it seemed fairly familiar to me. Mm-hmm. It seemed fairly competent. you know, maybe even ultra competent, very skilled and yet familiar. But one thing I did like is the balance where, you know, there's no bright line where this relationship between these two men goes from being kind of transactional where, you know, we are working together because we're working on this project and you're the best person for the project and you're the best person to help me achieve this goal that we both have and that we all have in this company that we work for. And the friendship, the kind of the place where it becomes a matter of personal loyalty. And I think you can also see kind of where that comes from. The other thing I would say about the film is it was interesting to me to watch it close together with, oddly, American Factory, which is the documentary on Netflix. That's about a plant where a Chinese company buys the plant and changes its purpose. And I think they're both kind of about the nature of having pride in work. They have a lot of pride in working on this project together and in having this accomplishment, even though they're led by this these kind of suit guys, including, I know Stephen really enjoyed the Josh Lucas character, who is kind of the most odious of the business guys.
I get frustrated when real life people are portrayed as cartoon villains in movies because you're sanding off so much and the person's not around to defend themselves. I found that Josh Lucas depiction of a real Ford executive, I always kind of shake my fist at that in movies. I often find it unnecessary. I did find it interesting in this film, when you look at how this movie has been received in awards, all of the acting attention has been placed on Christian Bale. And Christian Bale is basically, he's playing Ken Miles, but he's also playing Christian Bale. He's a kind of mouthy, difficult guy who butts up against authority.
But enthusiastic and gifted.
But enthusiastic and gifted. And I found that less interesting, actually, than the Matt Damon performance, which is kind of more pinched in a way that really worked for me. I think that's a really subtly pretty terrific performance that I was kind of bummed to see not get as much attention.
All right. Well, I am really curious to see what people think when they get a chance to see this movie. I would say if you're going to see it, if not in a theater, then at least on a decent enough screen that you can kind of enjoy the racing and the sound and all that kind of stuff. Because it is kind of a, I think the visceral racing parts are a good part to enjoy if you're going to see it. And tell us what you think. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Bilal at BQILAL. Thank you so much to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, subscribe to our newsletter. It's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here on Friday when we will be covering the Netflix series Cheer.
Hey, Gene.
What's good?
You know, we probably shouldn't be friends.
Why are you trying to hurt my feelings?
I mean, statistically speaking, most adults don't have a single friend of a different race.
As it happens, on the next episode of NPR's Code Switch, we're talking about making and maintaining friendships across racial lines.
Listen and subscribe.